be ready.
Okay. And she.
I'll let you know if it doesn't work.
Okay.
Okay.
April 1st, 2008, and that's no April Fools. Members present are Senators Davis, Ellis, and Stevens. We have a number of items before us today. We're going to set aside my bill on nursing mothers in the workplace for adoption of a committee substitute at a later time. We'll move on to SB 118, plastic bag fees. There is a committee substitute proposed there. The bill goes on to resources and finance. Then we'll go on to the two real estate bills that have previously heard. I hope to take action on all of those items. And then initial presentation on bills, House Bill 379 by Representative Hawker, Senate Bill 295, Clinical Laboratory Science Professionals, by Senator Davis, and we might get to House Bill 295 by Representative Lynn. Okay, Senator Elton is back before us. You want to just remind us the subject of your bill, and if you could speak to the proposed committee substitute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just very briefly, the committee has heard this bill before. This is a bill that employs the notion that if you tax behavior, you can change behavior. We didn't introduce this bill to raise revenues. Hopefully, the net effect of this bill is going to be to change behavior. It establishes a 15-cent tax on plastic bags, and the committee substitute is a good committee substitute. The committee and the committee staff have worked on it, and it phases it in at a nickel a year over 3 years. I would just note that this isn't a notion that has been untested. It is adopted from what happened in Ireland, where a 20-cent tax cut use of plastic bags by about 90%. And with that, I'll just you and the committee have heard the bill before. I'll answer any questions that may have come up since the last time you've heard it. And appreciate your consideration. The committee substitute once again it changes the bill by just doing a nickel a year for the next 3 years.
Okay. I'd like to note for the record that Senator Bundy has joined the committee. And Senator Elton, is it fair to say that there are folks on both sides of the issue? The committee substitute sort of phases in the impact over a period of time. You're just hoping to keep the conversation going. The bill does have a further referral to the resources and finance committees. So I sort of understand your appeal is to tune up the bill as best we can and to just keep the conversation going. It would have a long way to travel to get into law this session.
Mr. Chair, you're right. I consider this a project. And part of the project is initiating the discussion. This bill does that. I think that the committee work has made it a better bill. Would just note that you note there are people on both sides of the issue. There are probably people on 10 sides of the issue, but I would note for the record that my office has been working on this for a considerable amount of time. And as of just recently, we've received 615 signatures, 37 letters, a lot of email communications, all in support of the bill. And as of just recently, about the same time, we've received four letters, two from the American Chemistry Council in California and four POMs in opposition to the bill. So right now, the beginning of the discussion has been very supportive.
Okay, the committee's proposed committee substitute is the Bullard / E committee substitute that phases in the impact of the bill over a period of time.
Excuse me, Chairman, I've got M.
M.
Okay, we're going to make sure, committee staff's going to make sure we have the right committee substitute and that we all have it. Okay.
I did give you the wrong one.
Okay. The proposed committee substitute then is the Bullard / M. And I hope everyone on the committee has that. It has the same effect that I just mentioned. I will entertain a motion to adopt the proposed committee substitute. Thank you, Senator Stevens. Is there discussion of the motion to adopt the CS? Is there any objection to adoption of the CS? If not, so ordered. That is the item before us. Senator Elton's requesting consideration of moving the bill on to the Resources Committee for further conversation. So at this time, I will entertain a motion to move the bill. Senator Stevens, please.
Through the chair, let's see. Is the use of paper bags so much better than the use of plastic bags? And why would that be?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, it is. Every carrying device has its downside, but the biggest downside of the plastic bags is they don't biodegrade over time, and it has become a. The notion of this bill didn't come from seeing a plastic bag in a tree or in a bush being blown about by the wind, but there is a real problem that these bags don't break down in the marine environment, and it is causing considerable harm to marine mammals and marine fish.
Further discussion of the bill. Senator Bundy.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm sorry, I may have brought it up before, but there are biodegradable, we'll call it plastic bags there. Would they be covered under this 15 cent?
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, no. Section 1 of the committee substitute, beginning at the bottom of Section 1, subparagraph B, beginning at the bottom of page 1, notes that there are exceptions and the exceptions include biodegradable kinds of bags and bags used to contain ice or to contain fresh vegetables and fruits.
Okay, Senator Bundy.
Yeah, and of course, I understand the problem, particularly in the marine environment. I'm more familiar with rural Alaska where they're using plastic bags in their honey buckets. So this isn't going to have any impact there.
Through the chair, Senator Stevens. No, it's interesting.
Stevens over there.
Bundy.
You just lost my vote right there.
I'm the younger one.
I was trying to compliment both of you at the same time.
Now you come down here and you stir up trouble.
It's interesting, Senator Bundy, that in rural Alaska, this isn't a foreign notion at all. Many of the rural villages have already taken the step of banning plastic bags.
Conjure up paper bags in their honey buckets, but
through the chair, I was trying to avoid directly answering that specific question.
Yeah.
And further discussion, Senator Bundy.
Thank you. My concern is that some of us can afford to be environmentally conscious, and there are people in the lower income communities that can't. And of course, this cost gets passed on. Have you given any study, any thought to how this affects lower income communities?
Through the chair, I used this example before and was told by my staff it was inappropriate, but I'm going to use it again. I mean, it takes time to change behavior, and one of the things that I would note is in many of our communities, for example, we now pick up dog waste after our dogs. It just took a period of time, and this is a nudge. It should not cost anybody who chooses, for example, a paper bag or who brings in their own bag. We're seeing more and more of that, and I would like, this gives me the opportunity to compliment some of the big retail stores, Safeway and Fred Meyer, who are moving fairly aggressively in the direction of changing that behavior. In fact, Fred Meyer, and I'm looking to the side here to see if my staff person starts waving at me, is already charging for plastic bags. They're not charging as much as we anticipate.
Okay, further.
They're giving a refund. I'm sorry. They're not charging. They're giving a refund for bringing your own bag.
Okay. Further discussion? If not, at this time, the chair will entertain a motion to move the bill on to the Resources Committee.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move CECL Senate Bill number 118/M with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations on to the next committee.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Stevens. Is there discussion of the motion to move the bill? Is there any objection to the motion to move the bill? Hearing none, so ordered. The bill moves on to the Resources Committee. Senator Elton, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Okay, thank you, Senator Bundy, Senator Stevens.
Let's move on to, we don't have time for thank yous today, but we appreciate the thought. House Bill 357. Ms. Wolf, if you come back to the table. Or while she's doing that, I made a commitment to Senator Bundy to bring up Senate Bill 77. today. So, well, we have folks, Senate Bill 77, that's relating to agency fees, union dues. I think that's the title. Senator Bundy, you want to remind us of this?
Yes.
Because I, after you do that, I'm happy to entertain a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill is, as I said before, the pro-choice bill. Many of our public employee unions use part of their agency fee for political activities. We heard a quite an impassioned statement from NEA that they don't use agency fee, they use their union dues. And most unions have an opt-out procedure. After some political activity, if the member disagrees with the activity, feels that it doesn't represent their point of view, they can go through what I'd call a fairly complicated procedure to get reimbursed for that portion of their agency fee that was used for the political activity. What Senate Bill 77 says is simply when someone is hired on, and I misspoke at a previous meeting when I said it would be a yearly basis, it only happens once. When you're hired on, you are given the option to have a portion of your agency fee used for political activities or not. And there's been a quite an extensive court case in Washington where this was held to be constitutional because political or because money is political speech. And it seems as if I don't understand the NEA's opposition because it doesn't affect them, and I have not heard of any other opposition from other public employee unions. Of course, it doesn't affect private unions or non-public.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Bundy. At this time, I'll entertain. We need to get a motion on the table.
All right. Mr. Chairman, if I might, I'd move Senate Bill 77 from committee with individual recommendations.
Okay. And I will object to the motion. Is there further discussion of the motion? Senator Bundy, I think there is further. I think there was another testifier after Mr. Alcantara from NEA, a public employee fellow.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, yes. And that was the concern was if that was a yearly opt-out procedure or opt-in procedure. And as I point out, to correct the record, it's only once in during your employment, at the beginning of employment. And if I remember his testimony, and I don't want to words his mouth, but he said he wasn't going to testify, but when he heard it was yearly, that was a concern. But until that point, he didn't have a concern. And,
okay.
And as I said, I misspoke, so that is not an accurate portrayal of the bill.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Bundy. Is there further discussion? Senator Stevens.
Well, it just seems to me an issue of fairness, you know, that if you that you should have that choice as an individual where how your money is used politically, and if you donate to some kind of a political fund, it's it should be the one that you approve of, not the one that you disapprove of. So I certainly support it.
Okay. And I think you're a co-sponsor, actually, right?
Oh, even better.
I think you are. So I was aware of your position. Further discussion? I'll maintain my objection. Roll call vote on the motion to move the bill.
Senator Hoffman, Senator Bundy?
Yes.
Senator Davis?
No.
Senator Stevens?
Yes.
Senator Ellis?
No. Okay, so the bill does not move out of the committee. Okay, thank you. Ms. Wolf, thank you for being with us. House Bill 357 is now before us. This is claims against real estate licensees. The bill only has a further referral to the Rules Committee. Pretty simple, straightforward piece of legislation. This is the E&O issue. And I don't believe there are any committee concerns that have come up. Okay. And we have Jennifer Strickler from Commerce, if there are any questions on the bill, but no other public testimony. Any discussion on Senate Bill 357? Senator Bundy?
Yes, thank you. I did hear from someone who is, I would consider a small operator in the real estate business. It doesn't apparently do a lot of work, And they've been quoted as much as $700 for coverage, which would be onerous from their point of view. And I know we've been told that it'd probably only be a couple of hundred dollars. I'd just like that issue addressed.
Okay. Ms. Wolf?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name's Eleanor Wolf. I'm staff to Representative Kurt Olson and the House Labor and Commerce Committee. Through the chair, Representative Bundy, individuals in this area that have been quoted insurance individually have run into very high rates. That's why this is going to actually become a small group. The existing brokers that have insurance can go with this organization if they choose to do so, but the approximately 40% that aren't covered now will be able to go into this group, and they have said that we probably won't go over $200 a year for $100,000 coverage, but that is it. It's $100,000, where most brokers are carrying upwards of $1 million and a whole bunch of extras that aren't included in this policy. But it's just basic E&O insurance at $100,000.
Okay, thank you.
So we're trying to help folks out. That was the previous testimony, a much more reasonable rate than...
That's the idea, Mr. Commissioner.
Okay, we're here to help. Is there further discussion of House Bill 357? If not, I'll entertain a motion at this time to move the bill on to the next committee. Anyone have a motion?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bundy.
Yeah, I'd move House Bill 357, individual recommendations, attached fiscal note.
Okay, thank you very much for the motion. Is there discussion of the motion? Any objection to the motion? Hearing none, so ordered. The bill moves on. Now we have House Bill 413, extending the Real Estate Commission. And we've had public testimony before that the extension period reflected in the bill comports with the work of the Legislative Budget and Audit Division. So that's good enough for me. Is there any other committee discussion before we take a motion? Senator Stevens?
Ready for a motion?
I am.
Chair, I move that we move House Bill 413 out of committee to attach fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Okay. Is there any objection to the motion? Any discussion of the motion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The bill moves on to the next committee of referral. Okay.
Thank you,
Ms. Wolf. Thank you for your good work. We appreciate it. Representative Hawker, if you would join us at the table for the initial presentation of your legislation. It is the custom of the committee to have initial presentations, hold over the bill for timely consideration in the future. So,
number of this bill?
Well,
379.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
CPA.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
379. That's the item before us. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your record keeping. I am Representative Mike Hawker, representing District 32. In recognizing your time constraints, I'll be brief with this as well. House Bill 379 is really a piece of ministerial legislation. Folks will remember that back in 2006, the Alaska Legislature passed a fairly substantial updating of Alaska's framework for the licensing of certified public accountants in the state. We're moving the state slowly but surely into sort of the 21st century of being in conformance with sort of a best practices approach and a consistent approach across the nation for the licensing of certified public accountants. As part of that bill, one of the provisions that was adopted was a change in the education requirements to receive a CPA certificate. Prior to the adoption of the changes 2 years ago, a person could receive a CPA certificate if they passed the CPA examination and met certain experience requirements, but what is at issue is the scholastic requirements, the education requirements. Prior to the passage of the bill, we had two acceptable education requirements that could have been satisfied. One was that an individual had an accounting degree and then subsequently spent 2 years working under appropriate conditions supervised as an accountant, or alternatively, we would accept any degree, say such as a finance degree or an MBA, for someone who then worked for 3 years, an additional year of experience substituting for the specific accounting degree. Well, and then certainly the bill moved and eliminated the 3 year of any degree, and it says that, you know, CPAs, certified public accountants, really should have an accounting degree. That's good. It's excellent practice, without a doubt. What we did not take into consideration at that time was that And this bill did take effect. The new education requirements took effect January 1st, 2008. What we neglected to take into consideration was that there were a number of young accountants who had graduated with the other experience requirement, the other degree, prior to January 1st, 2008, that were out of university, graduated, had their degree in their pocket, and were working on a three-year experience program under supervision. Those folks, if this bill passed, would be denied, or as the bill passed, will be denied the ability to receive a CPA certificate without going back to school now, re-enrolling, and getting an accounting degree. So the purpose of this bill is to essentially grandfather in those people who graduated prior to January 1st, 2008, and allow them to continue the three-year experience requirement without having a specific accounting degree. This bill was brought to me by the Alaska State Board of Accountancy, certainly is supported by them, and the president of the board is here to provide that assurance if you would like, Mr. Chair. But again, in a nutshell, we're once again, you know, in that situation of helping people that we have caught inadvertently in a legislative dilemma.
Okay. Representative Hawker, thank you very much. Senator Stevens?
Would you say this was an egregious mistake made by some troglodyte in your body?
Through the chair, Representative Stevens, that troglodyte would be sitting in front of you.
Senator Stevens, thank you for that.
Just want to clarify that.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, be nice to the House members when they come over here. You will get a bad reputation. Okay, anything further for Representative Hawker? If not, thank you for your presentation. We do have Jennifer Strickler from Commerce available to answer questions. And I would like to get Mr. Mertz on the record. So, Max Mertz, if you'd come forward, please. Good afternoon. Please just identify yourself and your affiliation for the record and go ahead.
For the record, my name is Max Mertz, CPA. I'm chair of the Board of Accountancy.
We want to get your thoughts about the bill, your confirmation that this is a necessary and good thing to do.
I think it is. It is necessary and it's a good thing, and it's very timely too. As we were promulgating the new regulations to go with the statute, this came to light really last fall that we were harming some potential CPAs out there who otherwise should be able to get licensed. We've been pleased that it's been moving as quickly as it has, because this will allow us to, if we can get this passed, to notify these folks and they'll be able to proceed as planned. The board supports it. The board and unanimously at the January meeting supported the bill. So,
okay. Questions or comments for Mr. Mertz? If not, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Or Senator Stevens?
Mr. Chairman, just a question of you.
Sure.
Since this was really our mistake and not something we would have done if we had known all the implications, and it's something that since we are a very short time here, and it goes to finance where there are 107 bills sitting right now, I'm just wondering if you might consider moving it out today.
Well, I would consider that. My sheet here shows that it only has a further referral to the Rules Committee. Is that correct? Only, I think you may be looking at the House referral.
Oh, yes, I am.
On the bill.
Okay.
So my commitment is to hold it over and to send it on its way very quickly. It goes directly to you and in the Rules Committee. So I think we're in good shape timing-wise. So there's we don't anticipate any problem. Are there any requests for information or any issues? It doesn't seem like that. So we'll get this back up before us in very short order. Thank you, Mr. Hawker, for your time.
Appreciate it.
Okay, let's move on. So the bill is held over to the next committee meeting. Let's move on to Senator Davis's Senate Bill 295. And Mr. Burrell, if you'd like to join us at the table, please. We're going to switch out folders here. Mr. Burrell, good afternoon. If you'd like to give your name and affiliation for the record and go ahead with the initial presentation.
Not a problem. Thank you, Senator Ellis. Mm-hmm. For the record, my name is Don Burrell, staff for Senator Betty Davis. Before you is Senate Bill 295, an act relating to the licensing of clinical laboratory science professionals and providing for an effective date. Senate Bill 295 establishes a voluntary advisory board of clinical laboratory science professionals to assist the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development in identifying acceptable credentialing agencies and determining which laboratory tests will be included in the waived category. The FDA has established a list of waived tests. However, due to pressures from manufacturers, some tests on the list may not meet the definition of waived test found on page 7 of this bill. The advisory board would review the FDA's list and make recommendations to the department concerning which tests should be in the waived category. This bill also clinical laboratory science professionals and radiological technologists are two of the health professionals not licensed in the state. According to the Institute of Medicine, 70% of all medical decisions are based on diagnostic testing. If the individuals collecting the samples and performing the diagnostic testing are not qualified, the information used by the physician to diagnose or treat a patient may be incorrect. Clinical laboratory science professionals and radiologic technologists perform the majority of the diagnostic testing. Certification for the clinical laboratory professionals ensures that qualified professionals are performing diagnostic testing. By licensing clinical laboratory science professionals and requiring certification and participation in certification maintenance programs for licensures and renewal, we can ensure that qualified professionals are performing the diagnostic testing while controlling the licensing costs.
Okay. Mr. Burrell, thank you for your testimony.
Very well.
Are there questions or comments at this stage for the senator's representative? Senator Stevens.
Just a question. How many of these folks do we have in the state?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, we currently have approximately 400 in the state.
Okay. Senator Bundy.
And this is focused at the people who administer the test, not diagnose possible illness from the results of the test.
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, that is correct.
Thank you.
Okay. We do have Jennifer Strickler signed up to testify. Jennifer. Good afternoon. Welcome back to the committee. If you give your name and affiliation, and then we have, I'd also note that Colleen Moore from the Attorney General's office is available to answer questions. And then we have two folks to testify after Ms. Strickler. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jennifer Strickler. I'm the licensing chief in the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing, Department of Commerce. I've had earlier conversations with the sponsor staff on this issue to share our position. While we feel it's up to the legislature to decide whether this new industry should be licensed or not, we're lay people. We feel it may be a good idea. However, the bill as written, we have some serious concerns with the bill as written, and I'll run through these really quickly for you. First of all, the bill creates a new chapter 30 under Title 8, Professions and Occupations. However, it does not include 0830 under 0801, which is the Centralized Licensing Act, which are the statutes that give the department the administrative duties and powers, for example, to issue and sanction licenses, to establish fees, to adopt regulations, to conduct investigations, and to hold hearings. Secondly, the bill establishes a 5-member volunteer advisory board of clinical laboratory science professionals appointed by the governor, and therefore would be subject to confirmation by the legislature under AS 3905. Yet in the bill itself, the board is not subject to transportation and per diem expenses as directed in section 1 item D on page 2 of the bill, and we're not sure if this is legal or not. Item 3, the volunteer advisory board is not the subject of the sunset review process under 0803, and therefore, while the process to establish the board is established like any other regulatory board, we're wondering if this board is intended to exist continuously without legislative oversight. Under the duties of the board in section 0830030 on page 2, lines 14 to 16, the board's responsibilities are limited to only two items. Number one would be to identify credentialing agencies or organizations, and from the information we have, there's three known organizations affiliated with this group. Number two, to identify what laboratory tests should be defined as wave tests, and for this industry, we would need a board to assist us with that because we have no idea. Number five, section 0830080 on page 4 specifies duration of a license for 3 years or until the license is relinquished. All other licenses within the division are issued for 2 years on a biennium cycle. So if this bill were to be subject to 0801, centralized licensing, it would go to a two-year duration instead of a three-year. If it's not subject to 0801 and stays on 3 years, it would be the only program that we have a three-year license for. We feel the word relinquished should be changed to lapse, just for standardization in licensing terms, because it's very difficult to get someone to relinquish a license. Most folks let their licenses lapse and choose not to renew. And last, 0830090, Article 3 on page 4, beginning on line 27, provides the grounds for denial or disciplinary sanctions, yet it does not give the department the authority to investigate or to provide due process under the Administrative Procedures Act of 4462, which would normally be provided if the chapter was subject to 0801. And with that, I end my testimony.
Okay. Ms. Strickler, thank you very much. We'll want to get a copy of that in writing to the committee staff for inclusion in the public record and for future possible work on a CS or whatever we might choose to do. Questions or comments for Ms. Strickler? If not, thank you for being here.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a comment question
okay,
for her. But
Senator Davis.
A draft of this legislation, aren't they online?
The drafter?
Mm-hmm. Who did you say was online?
Oh, I have Colleen Moore from the Attorney General's office, but nobody from Ledge Legal is online as far as I know.
Thank you.
But we do have, you're welcome. We do have a couple of folks to give public testimony on the bill. First, Gloria Tomich, followed by Vicki Backus. Ms. Tomich? Okay, so Colleen Moore was for a different bill. Gloria Tomich? Ms. Tomich, can you hear us? Okay, maybe she's got the mute button on. No? Gloria Tomich? Or Vicki Backus? Is there anyone else here in Juneau who would like to testify at this time on Senate Bill 295? Okay, Gloria Tomich. Mr. Burrell, did you have more to say?
Yes.
Okay, please come back to the table. Mr. Burrell, please go ahead.
My apologies. I'm not sure if the committee had received it or not, but there is actually two fiscal notes that are attached to this bill.
Okay.
I believe one was passed out.
And that one is from which agency?
The Department of Administration.
Okay. So that's one we should already have in our packet. And
yes,
then what is the other?
The other is from the Department of Commerce and
Okay, so committee staff does have copies of that and is going to supplement the packet.
And I just wanted to make sure that that was included in the packet. They did inform our office that a part-time staff would be needed to oversee the 400 members of this particular profession.
Okay, so that was a late break, a surprise to you, or a late breaking development, or?
Very late, yes.
Yeah, it is that time of year, but. Okay, let's go back to the teleconference to see if we have Gloria Tomich. And we've lost our teleconference operator. Or Vicki Backus. I know these ladies really wanted to testify on this bill. Okay, well, she signed up on the, someone signed her up on the Senate Bill 295 form. Okay, Gloria Tomich. Well, Vicki is for another bill, apparently, though she's on this sheet. One more time, Gloria Tomich.
Gloria's hung up.
Okay, Gloria hung up. Okay, are there any requests for information from committee members on this bill? Any thoughts or requests? Before we hold the bill over for further consideration. Senator Bundy and then Stevens.
Yeah, based on the administration's concern, I don't think this bill is ready for prime time yet. And the only information I have in my packet is opposing the bill. It seems with health care costs doing what they are, this is just going to add additional costs without any appreciable impact on public safety or public health. So I need substantial convincing that this is worth our effort.
Okay. Senator Stevens?
Sure. I think I only have one official note, so I have to get hold of the other one. But just a question of the person carrying the bill. One of the comments that we had from Jennifer was about no per diem for the five-member board to meet. And I thought maybe that was covered by this official note, but it doesn't appear to be. Do you have any?
No.
Mr. Burrell?
My apologies, okay. Through the chair. As the bill stands, there is no fiscal relevance for that portion because the bill states that there is no per diem and no travel permitted for the advisory board.
Thank you.
Okay, any further requests for information or before we hold the bill over for further work? If not, Mr. Burrell, thank you very much. We will hold the bill over for further consideration. Let's move on to House Bill 295 by Representative Bob Lynn. Recorded or filed documents. Ms. Manley?
Yes.
If you'd go ahead and give the...
Yes.
We would imagine that Representative Lynn is busy elsewhere. Sends his apologies.
Yes, he does.
Okay.
For the record, my name is Nancy Manley, staffer Representative Lynn, District 31. Thank you for hearing this bill today. Advancing technology in the recorder's office has reached the point where we can now have instant recording, and HB 295 cleans up the statutes to allow this to happen. The bill amends three areas in statute to enable the return of original documents to the presenter at the time of recording, ensure all required recording information is located on the document, deletes references to film or scanning the daily recordings, removes references to court authority over the recorder's office, updates UCC forms referenced in statute to conform with national standards, and this bill also requires that documents presented for recording contain the name of the recording district in which the document is to be recorded. Our office was asked to carry this bill for the recorder's office, so any questions should be directed to the state recorder, Vicki Backus, who is online and hopefully will be able to talk. Your favorable consideration of HB 295 is respectfully requested.
Okay. Ms. Manley, thank you. Mm-hmm. Any questions at this stage? If not, let's go on to Vicki Backus. Ms. Backus, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, we're glad you are. So please give us your name and again an affiliation for the record, and then go ahead with your comments.
Okay. My name is Vicki Backus. I am the state recorder. I'm here primarily to answer any questions, but I can add a little more information to what Ms. Manley has already offered.
Yes, please. We need you to make the case for the bill.
Okay. This is some cleanup legislation for the recorder's office, but it will also help us pave the way for electronic recording in Alaska. And to do that, we need to be able to return a document immediately to the presenter after it's been recorded. Right now, the statute reads that we're required to return the document to the person identified within the document. And if we do electronic recording, we would not be able to abide by that statute because it would come in electronically. We'd have to return it electronically. So we're trying to get that updated. We're also looking to get all required recording information on the document itself. Right now, the only piece of recording information that's not required to be on the document is the identification of the recording district. Right now, this information can be given verbally or in a cover letter. And when it's given to us that way, we then have to secure it, retain it, and save it. So if a question ever comes up on what district that it was supposed to be recorded in, we can go to that record. So we're trying to get this a requirement to have that recording district information on the document itself. We're also looking to clean up a couple of areas. Right now there's a provision in AS 4025 that we have a requirement to provide facilities for copying the public record. And it also removes the reference to being under the direction of the court system, which the recorder's office hasn't been since 1977. The requirement to provide facilities for the filming and copying of the public record was put in place, well, probably back in the 70s, early 80s, when we had extreme backlogs in indexing and filming of the daily work. So the title companies got together, and it was determined that a company, an independent company, would come in and film our daily work to provide to the title companies. But now, being in the electronic age, we give electronic downloads to all of the title companies on a daily basis. So that's not an issue anymore. And one of the major things that we're trying to clean up with this bill is to give us the ability to reject UCC financing statements that are submitted on the old forms that are currently referenced in the statute that includes a space for Social Security numbers. And people using those forms feel compelled to fill in all the blanks, so of course they put in their Social Security numbers. And right now we're not in a position to reject those forms because it is in statute. There is already in place 11AAC06050, which provides for DNR to designate a UCC form, which we already have on the UCC website, so which is the current national form that does not include a space for a Social Security number. So that's basically a summary, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Ms. Backus, thank you for your presentation. Senator Bundy has a question.
Thank you. A number of years ago, there was a terrific backlog in the recorder's office. Has this technology and would this legislation help you address the backlog, or has it been addressed?
Senator Bundy, through the chair, yes, it has been. We haven't had backlogs like that in quite some time. We scan our documents on a daily basis. At some of our rural offices, like in Fairbanks and Juneau, they have scanners. They scan their documents daily and provide CDs to their customers. So title companies and other businesses that buy the information from us get it on a daily basis from us. Some of them locally get what's called a file transfer protocol, an FTP, which is a totally electronic download that they get from us. So instead of waiting even for a CD, they just get it electronically in the morning.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
Okay. Ms. Backus, this is Senator Ellis. How does your operation compare to recorders' offices in other states? And is this legislation, will this bring you up to par with the best practices in other states? Or can you just give us a brief comparison of how we stand up against other states?
Senator Ellis, through the chair, actually, I think the state of Alaska has a lot better recording system than most other states. As you might be aware, in most other states, I think all of them but Alaska and Hawaii, have various jurisdictions for recording throughout the state, usually handled on a county level. And they don't have the ability to have like a statewide search done from one source. Some states are going to that, but it's a conglomeration of different programs, different systems that each county has had. As far as our requirements for recording, they're at par with other recording jurisdictions. Our fees are certainly right in there. They're not above them. They're not below them. What we require is pretty standard. We belong to the Public Records Industry Association, PREA, which kind of sets the standards for recording. So we keep up with that kind of legislation. But all in all, the state of Alaska has better access to their documents with our retention and preservation programs that we have underway. We'll have the records, the public record of the state, available for research within the next 3 years. All of the records would be digitized.
Okay. Thank you. Is there any known opposition to the bill?
None that I am aware of.
Okay. Any further comments from committee members or questions? Any requests for information? If not, we'll be holding the bill over for further consideration in the very near future. Ms. Backus, thank you for your time today. And if there's nothing else, House Bill 295 is held over for future consideration. That's it for today. Thank you all for hanging in there. And at the time of almost exactly 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we are adjourned.